Welcome to La Film Nation. Our podcast is about filming, business, and gear. On today's episode, we're going to discuss how to start making money with video today. It's going to be a really good one. Let's get started. Welcome back. My name is Nigel, and I'm a videographer and filmmaker based in Fukuoka, Japan. And John?
Hey, I'm John Bear. I'm a YouTube filmmaker. And William?
William. I'm a photographer and videographer in Fukuoka, Japan.
All right. Thanks, guys. So today, John's going to be taking the lead, and it's all about how to make money with video. Not tomorrow. Not yesterday. Today.
I like the sound of that. And we're going to talk about not just how to make money, but like assuming you start from nothing. Like if you have nothing, you got no skills, you got no gear, where would you go to make money with video? Well, that's what we're going to discuss today. So we have a few talking points here, and let's just jump right into it.
Sure.
So the first one is how to start right now without gear or skills. So we'll look at learning resources first.
Okay.
You guys have any suggestions for learning resources?
YouTube.
Yeah. YouTube is huge, right?
That's my first thought, yeah.
I mean, even I'm creating tutorials on YouTube right now for Premiere Pro and different just camera techniques and stuff like that. But in general, like if you're beginning and you want to start making money today, I think YouTube would be a little disjointed. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, that's true.
To be fair, you can find anything on YouTube, but it's going to take some more searching to sort of make it all coherent, I think.
Digging around. Yeah. And the more beginner you are, the less you know what you have to learn. So,
Right, exactly. You're right. So this is where something like a video course can streamline the learning process and really put you in the right direction of what's important to focus on right now.
Because with the whole YouTube thing, you know, people go to film school and then they learn, you know, at film school how to make short movies. And, you know, the teacher teaches you every aspect of filmmaking. But when it comes to YouTube, you have to put the time in because you want to learn how to do narrative and, you know, drones and all these different things. So you have to sit there and type in, you know, how to fly a drone or how to make a movie, how to do this.
Yeah.
So you really have to go full force into it and really want to learn.
And you don't know
what
topics you need to learn by yourself. Yeah. You might focus too much on one thing or another.
And there's so many aspects of filmmaking, right? So it's very tough which way you're going, right? So
I have a very good example of that. It's like with YouTube, the way the ecosystem works is that people will create video tutorials for stuff that's like sexy, that people want to click on. But you know, learning to use proper lighting is not usually something very clickable or something you will search for first. And I've learned that the hard way, man. I've been ignoring lighting for a long time. And then when I finally started learning it from a video course, I was like, why wasn't this the first thing that I jumped into?
Yeah.
So that's one of the pitfalls with YouTube, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, there should be a way to just like, if I was to jump in, it would be like, you know, learn the back end of business, how to make invoices and how to do all that, and then maybe start jumping into cameras and then drones and then editing. I don't know, like just like from the very like beginning course. I mean, who knows? That would be great for us to make something like that. But I mean, you know, I'm just saying, like if you were to start from the beginning end, you know, all the way to the end, I mean, that would be a huge accomplishment to put something like that together. But
That's maybe something we might consider in the future.
Yeah, we might.
But as for resources that are available right now, personally, I guess I'll start here. I'll share my screen.
Sure.
One thing that I found really valuable was this course here from Full-Time Filmmaker.
Yeah.
Now, he's been very good with social media. So if you're watching this podcast, there's a chance you've already seen this guy, Parker Wahlbeck. He's grown his business immensely, and he has a full team of people making videos now. But he released this Full-Time Filmmaker course way back in the day, and it is very basic. It goes from the very first few things you need to learn about making good quality video all the way into how to land a job and how to market yourself and how to make money. So for me, this was like the complete course. Like this taught me so much about basically what we're talking about right now. So I can recommend this wholeheartedly. And the cool thing is, as well, is that you don't have to buy the full package. You can like sort of segment it down a little bit, as you can see here on my screen right now. So if, for example, if you're interested in real estate specifically, this is the course you could just jump right into. And then you have like a preview YouTube video for each one, right?
No, that's cool.
So he gives away a lot of content for free. So even if you were not to buy anything, you could just go to the site and really like get ideas of where to go
next. You can get the gist at least. Yeah.
Exactly, the gists.
I took his Final Cut course. It was really good. It was like beginning to end on Final Cut, how he imports and edits. And it was a trip he did in British Columbia, where I'm from. And it was like, you know, the mindset of how he actually edits and stuff. And it was like, wow, he just dropped all of his files on the timeline. I was like, what? Yeah. And he just went, yeah, here's everything on the timeline. And I like to just chop it. And for me, I don't do that. I go to the top and I choose the segments. And he's like, don't do that. Mm-hmm. Just drop it in. So different way of editing. I never thought of doing that. So
He's got I remember a really good course. I first saw that as well. Yeah. And I've integrated some of that into my personal workflow, but everybody's a little different. So it's good to get like different perspectives as well. And you develop your own sort of editing style as you go along.
I see. Yeah. Personally, I really enjoy Philip Bloom. He is a DP based out of England, and he taught me a lot on filmmaking also. And his course is quite a little, I think it's about the same price. It's around $199, I believe. Mm-hmm. So
That's cheaper, no?
I don't remember. It's is it cheaper?
Way cheaper,
yeah. He's got a really interesting way. So what he does is he does lens whacking. And so lens whacking is where he changes the lens and he actually removes it off the base of the, the camera body. And he starts like actually removing the lens and extending it out of the body. So it's a very interesting style. And then he goes into the basics and then visual storytelling, interviews. Interviews is awesome, man. He really digs deep into interviews and some of the secrets that he does and things like that. And the positioning. Positioning is really important with interviews. Where to sit with the camera over your shoulder and things like that. Asking the right questions in interviews. I learned a lot on that one. So again, that's really good. Slow motion, time lapse, aerial photography. He goes into drones. So that was quite nice. And then he makes an actual story and then post-production and his workflow. So the reviews are absolutely amazing. And I would definitely recommend this course. It was, for me, a big one to learn. So
it seems to me that he also, like, he chunks it down into little modules as well. So you could you could just buy the specific one. For example, for me, looking at that list, the one that jumped out to me was interviews.
Yeah,
and I think that's something that Parker Wahlbeck doesn't necessarily cover in his full-time filmmaker one.
Oh, it doesn't.
So that's something that I might check out.
Yeah, I can't remember. It was something that's very specific about interviews, but it was something like ask the right questions, and then if they say it, maybe ask them to re-say it again, but more in a concise a concise way. Just sort of do it again, but this time just make it a little bit tighter if you can.
That's a good idea.
So I really like that, you know, where he does
that. That's a good
that.
Idea because if you ask someone the same question again, they might rephrase, even if you don't ask them to make it shorter, they will rephrase it because they have had time to think about it. Yeah, that's a good point.
This is why I love doing these podcasts. Yeah. I've been learning so much just that's by a good, talking good to point. You guys.
So it doesn't not it does not teach only the shooting of the interview, but really how to conduct the interview and talk to the person. Amazing. That's good.
He also talks about how to stop an interview person from talking too much. And what he does is he actually says, oh, just hold on. I got to look and make sure it's still recording. And he says, if you say that, it cuts the person off from talking.
They will
and
get,
he
like,
said, instead of you saying, please stop talking, you just go, hang on, I need to just make sure it's still recording. And he reaches over and he goes, okay, I think that was really good. And I thought that was a really
interesting
way.
And then you move
on
to the next question.
Yeah, you move on to the next question.
Amazing. That's so
that's
good.
A really good technique.
You can't, 25 years of work from him, BBC, you know, all those big companies. So he knows how to do an interview. So
So we've talked a little bit about learning resources now.
Yeah.
But the elephant in the room is, what are you going to use to film if you don't have any gear? So again, on this topic, assuming you don't have anything to start with.
Yeah.
You've learned how to edit. What gear should you get within a realistic budget, of course?
Yeah.
And I think I'll give it to you, William. I think you have some good pointers for getting some good gear on a realistic budget.
Yeah, so, well, the first thing you need, obviously, is the camera, I guess. As much as I like to, like we like to say, oh, lighting is super important. Well, you need to start with a camera, probably. And, I mean, Blackmagic is still, like, the best thing you could get, I guess. Maybe it's not a beginner camera, I don't know. It's probably harder to master because you don't have any IBIS, you don't have any autofocus. But it's really like the cheapest option that's going to give you the best image quality. Like for $1,300, that's pretty cheap.
Not only that, but it gives you access to DaVinci as well, which is
and software. And you have access to very good software for editing and color grading. But I don't know if it's the best. I think it's the best second camera. Like once you already have like a certain level and you just want to take it to the next step without like ruining yourself, you know, right? But I think what you did is even a better approach. Like you just like used a camera that I think your girlfriend's camera, you know.
It was like a pocket Lumix, wasn't it?
Yeah,
like
it's a very cheap
pocket
one.
Lumix camera, designed for women.
Grab it here, just a second.
Okay. I'll actually, just while he's moving away there, John's left us for a while there.
No,
I'll throw in the Lumix G7. The Lumix G7 is around $400.
Wow.
And that's a really good little, and I think it might have stabilization. I might be wrong on that. But
I think maybe not, but
maybe not.
Go on,
But for $400, you're in the game. You've got a 4K camera, so
you
can slap lenses on there. So you could use that for 5 months, 6 months until you start getting some work, and then you could move up to a Blackmagic. But $400, $500, you're in the game.
I think this is the best.
That's unbeatable.
So how about yours?
There's a YouTuber called D4 Darius, and he still uses the G7, I think.
Oh, does he? Yeah.
And he actually makes movies. So
yeah, there you go.
So the one that I have, it's in a similar category. So this is the Lumix camera that's marketed to girls. Now, the cool thing is it's got a flippy screen.
Ooh, a flippy screen.
Nice.
It's not stabilized.
Oh, okay.
But you see here I have a lens on that is a stabilized lens. Mm. So I will use this for making thumbnails or as a B camera occasionally for my YouTube still. Yeah. But this is what I used for probably like 18 months or something like that.
Yeah, you and me, we were always out using that little camera of yours. And I was checking your lenses to make sure they're all nice and clean. I was like, John, clean those lenses, baby. Clean those lenses.
That's true, man. Yeah. I learned so much just shooting with you. So I guess that would be in another tip that we can throw into this podcast.
Have a mentor.
Find someone else to partner up with.
Yeah, if you can find a mentor in real life, it's the best, like the fastest way to...
John and I used to go out at the fish market at 7 in the morning. We'd meet at 6:30 and at 7 we'd start filming. We're in the fish market in Japan filming at 7, you know, gimbals and all these crazy shots. And then we'd sit at a cafe and talk about, you know, our next possible location and stuff. So we were crazy back in those days, you know.
And like, we didn't even have like an intent of what to do with the footage. We just wanted to go out and film. You know? It was like a burning need. We just had to go out and film something. And fish market, 7 in the morning in Japan, it's a busy place. You know, people are selling the catch of the day, they're haggling, and it's like it's so lively, you know. You can't not get like exciting footage just going there.
But the cool thing is, because I scout located it, I had a rapper guy, Nikki Tall from our previous episode there. And I was like, Nikki, we got to go to the fish market. It's a really cool environment. I got Nikki walking down with the gimbal. He's all walking cool like this, right? And it's an epic shot, right? This Japanese fish market, and he's exploring Fukuoka, Japan. So yeah, it's scout locating is really good because you can remember these spots, you know, when you have like a real paid job. So I like that.
Back to the, the camera. So basically you started with that, John. So that's that's a very good case of you know, like just using the camera that you had. You didn't even buy it, right? You just kind of borrowed it.
I just kind of borrowed it. But in the end,
yours.
Like,
it became yours.
Yeah, because like, you know, still it is basically a professional camera. Like it doesn't do everything for you. And so you know, my girlfriend, she just preferred to use an iPhone and she just never used it anyway.
How much is that camera worth? Like, what's the retail of the body? Just the body itself.
Body? I think it's about similar to the G7. Probably a little, like around $500, something like that.
$500.
But the important thing is it has all the functions of a high-end Lumix camera.
That's
like, it's got interchangeable lenses. So like already you'll start to realize the importance of lens over body. So, you know, you can already start investing in your lens collection and then, you know, upgrade your body as you go.
And then when you buy a new camera, you already have all your lenses. So
Just so the viewers know, Micro Four Thirds, which John has in his hands there, is the same with Blackmagic. So Micro Four Thirds
it's a mount
lenses
system.
will all fit. So if you go low end, like a G7 or what John's got, or like these, you know, lower end Micro Four Thirds cameras, you can start investing in your lenses. And then when you go for something that's like a Blackmagic, which is about $1,200, then you could just keep your lenses. You just swap your body out, and you can usually sell the body that you have on online auctions, which I've done. And then I just turn around and sell that camera, like yours, for example, for maybe $150. And I'm like, I put that towards my new camera, right?
Yeah.
So that's something to think about. So you're not throwing away your lenses, guys. You're keeping these lenses.
So start with a cheap camera and buy, you're better off like buying a few lenses than just a very good body and a shitty lens at first.
Yeah.
I think that's for me really important.
Well, yeah, I would say even like going vintage, like there's so many vintage lens options.
Yeah, true, that true.
Like for video, honestly, when you're doing video, you don't need all the auto functions, you don't need autofocus, you don't need any of that
stuff. But I would so, like, still, as a beginner, I would still like get something with IBIS, with the stabilization, because you don't want to have to invest in gimbal and all of that stuff, so it's good to have IBIS at least on the lens.
IBIS is a good point. In-body image stabilization, for those who don't know what IBIS is, so I want to throw that out there.
So either on your camera or your lens, you need some kind of stabilization that's better.
And when another thing you got to throw in is lenses have OIS, which is
optical image stabilization.
So if you take a OIS lens and you take an IBS body and you put the two together, you get, I believe, five axes of stabilization.
That's pretty good.
So that's pretty damn
Or
cool.
OIS.
OIS. There it is. John, we got it. Yeah, there it is. OIS.
It's kind of dark, but
Just so you know, if you throw an OIS lens on some bodies like my GH5S and I pan, it does some weird little jittery things at the end of the pan. So you got to be really careful when you're panning your camera there. It'll sometimes do some weird things internally in the footage. So if you have it on a tripod, just turn off OIS. If you're walking around, keep it on. But if you're doing any pan and tilts, just turn off the OIS on your lens. So a little tip advice there for you.
Okay, that's good. So what's next? Like camera and...
Yeah, so you got the
camera. Well, so we've talked about within realistic budgets.
Yeah.
But there's always the chance that you can rent gear. Like, let's say you're somebody who is, you know, you're faking it till you make it. You manage to land a big job. You can just budget for renting gear. And then that's always an option. So if you have friends that you can team up with, that's huge as well. So honestly, there are many different entry points, I would say, but I guess the most common one would be the one we already covered. Just get a cheap gear, practice with it,
have
fun. Yeah,
that's the difference, because if it's yours and you have it all the time, you can actually practice with it a lot before your shoot. You know, you just don't rent. I think renting gear for your first job is kind of like, I mean, you'll be there with a camera you don't know, and it's a recipe for disaster. But
absolutely,
You really should take your camera and literally just film everything you can in your house, all your kids, anything, and just know that camera inside and out. I need to switch to 4K, slow motion. I need to change, change. And you have to be very quick on your buttons because there's no time when you're in the field. So,
lenses on the other hand is something you can rent. You can rent all day
there
long.
That's a good suggestion.
Just one thing about the renting thing is, if you are moving into higher production, then you can bill the customer. So like if you need professional lighting, you can go and rent. If you need costumes, if you need those things, you can rent those things if you need them, you know. So it is possible to rent other things than just the camera. So just want to throw that out there. So
Cool. Now, at the beginning of this podcast, we mentioned making money today. So how are we going to make good on that promise?
That sounds good.
That's a tough one, right? But it's not impossible. So first off, you would have to land your client. Now, there are different ways to get into it. Like, you could really just be a like hardcore marketing guy that you're just managing to find these people and meet their needs. Or you can try to team up with existing videography companies and see if you can help them out, or at least ghost their projects. Yeah. Like, try to offer some value to the local communities. And, you know, they might want to take you along and teach you the ropes and maybe introduce you to some clients.
That's a good idea. If you know people that do video already, just offer them to join for free for a day. Like, I'll help you out for a day. Just you teach me the ropes and I tag along. And then you can say, I've done this job. You didn't really make it, but you participated. So, you know, you get the experience still.
100%.
You got to get your foot in the door. That's the key here. You got to literally say yes to everything.
Yeah. Right? And on that day, maybe you do a good job, and maybe next time when they need you, they actually pay you instead of you tagging along for free.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, Nigel, you mentioned getting your foot in the door. Do you have any more suggestions to get your foot in the door? Like something that you could do starting from square one?
Just to get your foot in the door into the companies, you mean? Like to get into these places? I've been asked to advise production companies from a foreign perspective. So they wanted me, the job didn't pan out, but they wanted me literally just to go in and help them with a foreign eye. So I thought that was a really interesting way. I've taken a grip job before on a company, and I didn't know how to be a grip, and I told them I don't know how to be a grip, but they said, we don't care, we don't have anybody. And then I went off to Tokyo for a week and I became a grip, and I literally didn't know, you know, everything, all the terminology of all the things that they wanted and stuff. So I told them, you know, I don't know anything, but they taught me ground up how to diffuse lighting and all the different terms and things. So I got really lucky that somebody actually allowed me to work for them. But beyond that, I'm pretty much self-taught. I haven't worked for a lot of companies. I do a lot of my own sort of personal jobs. But, you know, friends of friends of friends would probably be the best thing. It's like the unions, you know, the union work, unions like that. You got to have a friend who gets you in the union. So I think you have to do that.
So that segues pretty well into how I got my start, which was just filming for music concerts. And, you know, I have two older brothers and both of them play music. So I was kind of lucky with that I had someone with an event going on and they needed somebody to, basically they needed somebody to document it, right?
Yeah.
So I would offer my help, and I did some stuff for free and realized, you know, the hard way, the difficulties of covering a live event.
Yeah.
That's super hard,
but it also
hard,
emboldened
man.
Me. Yeah.
you started but hard.
Exactly. But it really gave me the confidence to go out and try to really market myself, and you know, it would actually give me something to show off and say, hey, this is something that I made. So that's the first step of getting your foot in the door, is like reach out and do stuff for free. And I've said before, I don't want to do stuff for free, but when you're very in the very beginning,
it
might be
all.
The best bet to do, because you need that experience.
You
just made me think of something. Actually, there was a time where the Spanish event was here and they had live concerts, and I literally went up to the desk and I said, I want to film your company for the live event, and I gave them my resume and I gave them a whole bunch of stuff. And then I think about 6 months later, a friend of a friend said they need a videographer for the event. And it was 2 days of filming. It was $150 a day. It wasn't very much. And I worked for 12 hours a day. It was hard work. And I ended up editing the videos, and that turned into work after that. And now I'm doing their videos and stuff. So that was me actually going there in person and just throwing my resume at them. And it actually turned into a job. So there you go. It does work if you cold
work,
call at the door. And
if you're persistent. That's good. Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate the point that we made in the previous video about working for free. Like you said, it's like you still have to kind of like discuss the conditions first, like be very clear about what you're going to do and what you can't do, and you know, the scope, because it's very easy to get taken advantage of when you say, oh, I'm going to do that for free for you. So just something to keep in mind, right John?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've shared my story in the past.
Just watch the older video if you want to. Yeah, I think it was our podcast number 2 or 3 I think.
3 possibly.
I think it was 3 about pre-production.
Just be really
storyboarding. A storyboarding episode.
It was a pretty good episode.
Just be clear how many videos it is, and you know, the length and all that, and you know,
and the deadline and all of that.
It's 2 videos, it's an A and a B, and this is what it is, and yada yada yada, and it's 10 minutes long. Okay, I got it. You know, where's the music coming from? All right, we know everything. Cool.
And getting your foot in the door, something just came to mind. Something that I did when I was in Japan, I did some social media stuff for a local waffle restaurant called Bell Waffles. And I was brought on to be the social media guy, but I actually did a lot of the photography and the videos for that as well.
That's right.
And it sort of allowed me to create a bit of a portfolio and actually just come in there and film some of the stuff that they have going on, both events and just making of the waffles. So just claw it, whatever you can, you know, start making those videos and give value.
You gotta scrape it, man. You gotta work hard, man. Give me the work.
But it is so much fun. If you can actually make it work, then yeah, it's worth it.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. And I think it helps having YouTube channels and all those, you know, all your media, and you just keep putting that content out there. People will see you out there, man. So, you know, upload you making waffles at home. Just put it out there, man. Do whatever you can, you know. So
Yeah. I mean, this this guy, Daniel Schiffer, huge guy on YouTube, he's gotten really popular with his, like, making food style videos.
Yeah.
He calls it, like pizza B-roll or something like that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, a lot of it he did by himself, just at his home with his girlfriend. Mm. And then, you know, that became, like, his signature style. And then he's brought on to make those types of videos for businesses. Yeah. And, so you never know what might be your entry point.
You were influenced by him. When I first met, you were like copying Daniel Schiffer. If I remember, you were doing the whole like food and you were doing all this stuff. And I was like, what is this? And you're like, oh, this is Daniel Schiffer, man. This is like the coolest stuff. And I didn't like it so much. I was like, ooh, I don't like it so close. I want to see the food. And then I want to like go in. But everything was just like warpy close. And that was the trend. That's what was, he was creating this sort of trend style. And you were emulating it and you were copying it. You may not do it anymore, but at the time you were into that style, you know? So
I was a young buck excited to move my camera.
Yeah.
But I would say that now I feel, personally, man, now I feel like dialing, like it's good to jump into the exciting stuff with cameras, but then you learn to dial it back a little bit and like you can create more, I don't know what to call it, but it's just more sort of like, viewable content.
Yeah, more viewable. Because like,
it can't be exciting all the time.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Having tripod shots are so necessary. Yeah, like if you have a video with no tripod shots, like it's like a relief when you finally get a shot that's not moving.
It's about rhythm, basically, right? Rhythm. Like in music, you don't want to have like just a beat drop like the whole way. You need some rise, you need some beat drop, you need some pause, and you need to breathe, you know? So that's just about rhythm. And about that, I have a comment that you can really spot a very good edit in a video if by turning on the music, turning off the music, you watch it and it still looks good. It still feels well-paced. So turn off the music, watch the video, and if you can still like kind of feel the beat of the video, that means it's very well edited. Otherwise, I mean, it's boring or too fast or whatever. That means you didn't
nugget of wisdom right there.
Yeah.
That's good.
Ooh, that's a nugget.
Yeah, it's a nugget. This is why we love doing these. All right. So just to summarize the stuff that we've gone over today, we've talked about from this angle of if you have nothing going into this, like how would you proceed? We started by looking at some of the learning resources. We had a recommendation from Nigel about Philip Bloom's courses, specifically about his interview courses being like absolute bomb. And I mentioned myself the full-time filmmaker course, which honestly, it covers so much that it's probably one of the best bets I would give, say, for anyone getting into this. Like, that's a really good course because it just covers everything from like basic camera settings that you just might not even know about. So I mean, I'm almost embarrassed to admit that until I watched that course, I didn't really know everything about like shutter speed. So watching that course, it was really good, just setting me straight. So that's an example of where watching too many YouTube tutorials, you might get a lot of information but not on the like the most fundamental stuff. All right, so after that, we moved on to gear. So what gear can you get on a realistic budget? So we got some input from both you, Nigel, and William. William suggested the Blackmagic as a sort of like middle level, maybe not the very beginning, but as a good middle level because of the sheer value that you get from buying a Blackmagic. And then we got from Nigel the recommendation of getting a G7 from the Lumix series, which is a $400 camera, which director D4 Darius on YouTube still uses today. So that's an easy way to get into the game, shooting 4K footage for as low as $400. And on top of that, you can use vintage lenses and learn how to use them, you know, as you go. So there are definitely cheap ways to get into it. And then we touched upon what I was using, which is basically like this sort of 4K selfie cam marketed for girls. But in the end, it's sufficient for everything that I was making in the beginning. So gear-wise, you can go really cheap if you want to.
Mm. For sure.
And finally, we touched upon how to get your foot in the door, getting your first clients. And we talked about how to do stuff for free, how to offer your skills as help to other people. But generally, just go out there, start filming, and have fun. And something will stir up.
Exactly.
So I think that's about it. What do you think, Nigel?
Yeah, no, those are really good points that you covered. We had a whole bunch more points, but we're going to just go with that. I think it's awesome. And then I think next week we're going to go into the skills and the gear that you already have and how to start making money from it. So I think that's a really good point. Now you got your camera. Now you got to move to the next level, and that's going to be our next podcast. So I think that's a really good another series that we might spin off this. So I like this, man. It's really good. So
definitely. Awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so if you appreciate what we do here on this podcast, we would love it if you could share with your friends on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or any other social media outlets. And finally, you can find all this information on www.lafilmnation.com. All of our links are there for you to enjoy our content. And as always, guys, thanks for watching. We'll see you next week. And... peace.
Peace.
Peace out.